I look at the conformal mechanism with a disadvantage position. So the consumer doesn't give himself or herself a service. So it takes two to tango. Now we have got myself who wants some finance or anything, and I'm overcommitted. We've got a provider who makes ways to provide me with the finance. At the end of the day, I don't get gold listed, let me put it that way. And the provider remains there without any punitive measure. That's the issue I think that we need to talk about. Here is interesting. Has provided some misinformation about expenses and so on. He runs into trouble now and is not gold listed. But the provider remains as just the same, continues with the job. So that's one issue I think we need to also take into account. If we say, I think some people were saying we need to sort of criminalize whether the service provider, what have you. But because definitely I don't see myself earning 20,000 and I have expenses that are 19,000. I still go further to a service provider and ask for finance. And then that service provider gives me that finance. So we need to do something there. One issue, even about consumers going to court and asking for judges to be lenient. It's a long process. Generally, justice is long in South Africa and expensive. So why put someone who has got a debt of 1,000 rand into that process? Getting a lawyer, some people even have to go to High Court to get this decision. So we need to be doing something. I'm sure the NCR will be playing a key role in all this. That is one issue. There is a slide that was shown by the tribunal, I think on page 11, slide 11, telling a story of South Africa. I think you have it, of the cases. It shows cases from 2009 up to 2012. And these cases are growing. And growing very fast. Which tells us things aren't looking good for us going forward. Now in 2009, if we had about 5 cases, in 2012, we have 2,250. Going to the tribunal. So it tells the story that there are more cases and it's increasing. So these are the things that we need to take into account. How do we reverse these cases back to 2009? Which means there are more and more people becoming and swimming into the pool of debt. And they're not doing this on their own. The service provider is a major contributor. Now, also to the tribunal, I wanted to check what measuring stick is being used to check or match household expenses. Now, you had said they provide incorrect information that they spend 200 rand a month for household, it's a family of 5. Is that scientific enough? Why don't we say, get something scientific? Some research. Family of 5 lives like this, a family of three, so that if one asks for credit, in the checklist that says,
staff
comes inside, oh, you're seven, oh, you shouldn't be spending on this, you shouldn't be relying on me supplying that information. So it's something standard. I think we need to have that. And the question that we need to ask ourselves, why do consumers borrow? Why? You know, they don't just borrow. They borrow because what they have is not enough to sustain them. And they don't realize that even if they borrow, they're adding to what is not going to sustain them. But if my 20,000 cannot sustain me, and I borrow 20,000 more, I'm adding more troubles, I'm not solving the problem. So it's a South African issue, that there's the issue of poverty, there's the issue of unemployment, there's the issue of access to finance and so on. So these things we need to tackle. How do we help people move out of poverty, get employed, so that they rely less on borrowing? You know, there are cases we come across, cases of students not being co-listed. They come to the university, they cannot get employment, this issue has been raised. I had an email from somebody in Bloemfontein some years back who had a disability who could not be employed by the department after going through all the interviews because there was a blacklist. So these are serious issues with some unintended consequences. You know, the CTA said, was saying something even about the saying the gold listing is far bigger than the black listing. The percentage is high. You know, in soccer, and if you are a goal scorer, you can score 40 goals to make your team win a trophy in a year. 40 good goals. But the day you miss a scoring a goal that will make the team win, that will be the day you'll be remembered by. Not the one that you have scored. So irrespective of the fact that there are many good people that are played, but this thought of people that are blacklisted makes us to view the credit bureaus and so on as really the people that are really not that good. At the same time, we must know that certain service providers use credit listing as a threat. They talk to people and say, I'll put you on blacklisting. So you are that side, there is no defense, there is no what they are just told, you are blacklisted. Even the credit bureaus do not hear your side of the story. They just get information, blacklist this one, they blacklist, or something of that sort. What I'm trying to say is that the consumer is not heard on the other side. Because I remember my brother, he had a problem with the one company that feeds these things, anti-hygiene things. He said, you know, I never bought this thing. The company was busy phoning me and saying, you must pay. He said, I don't know. But then he was blacklisted. He had no authority, so he had to go to court. He said, you know, I never dealt in my whole life with this company. I deal with other companies. How they got to know, got my details, I don't know. So he went to court, and he said, a lot of money. Then it was realized that it was a mistake. You know, just one error, one slight mistake, your history is doomed. But then he was fortunate because he had an opportunity to challenge it. What about the rest, the poor, who just sit down and say, I can't do anything, I'm blacklisted. I've raised this issue that why would the consumer not want to repay debt if he is referred to a bad faith? beyond his means. He doesn't have the money. There's no way, if he can't borrow another money to pay this, there's no way he can pay this amount. It's not that he's refusing, then he's classified as bad faith. He doesn't want to pay debt. So this is a reality. So to me, let me say this word, which is not popular, blacklisting is sort of one-sided. Not all sides are sitting on the table. It should be a legal issue. It ends up being a legal issue, but one player does as he pleases, the other one submissive, then listed. Then the other player fights alone now in the court. So it's not that equal. But the approach of the committee is that, be that as it may, we had a TRC, even today, it talked about amnesty. Even today, there's still people that are in prison who thought they qualified for that amnesty. Even with the recent remission, even with the tax amnesty, even with the firearm amnesty, we cannot do it 100%, but we need to start somewhere. You know, we need to be moving somewhere. Say this is a start. We're not saying as a committee, remove the credit history, remove something. We're looking at the situation and say, South Africa is facing this position. It's in this condition right now. We believe credit listing is also contributing to it. We can have employment, we can have people employed, we can change the lives of the people, their own houses, their own. We're not saying all of them will be 100% rehabilitated if we start on a clean slate. We say if we do that, we would have contributed to South Africa in changing the lives of the people. Whoever then will have other educational campaigns about consumer awareness, about credit, and so on. The 2006 one, I don't know, most of us have said it didn't bear the fruits that we wanted. It is because I think we're emotional when we did. We're not practical and we're not in our proper senses for lack of use of words. We just wanted, you know. But the issue is here. We want to see outcomes with this amnesty that we anticipate. We want the credit bureaus to continue doing their work. We're dealing with the country as a whole, we're playing together. If we believe that this thing will assist, let's do it. We know it's not going to be easy, and all of us are not here. Some of the members have come. Did you ask, were your comments or were not responded to, Honorable Mbuni? So we'll give the presenters that presented an opportunity to comment on what was commented, so that we can move forward. Honorable Fandinge, I didn't see your eyes blinking, so I was waiting for that.
Chairperson, does that mean you're giving me the opportunity to ask a couple of questions? Thank you. I'm a little bit concerned about the deep feeling of an amnesty is going to be a cure for all. Because history has proved that it didn't work. And the people came back with the same results. So if we want something to be different, we've got to think out the box and we've got to find another mechanism that'll make the thing work. Now, my concern is the big picture. We're sitting with a credit bureau that works, and that's very highly rated internationally. If we meddle with that, what happens? So you will know that the presenters this morning brushed over figures. They didn't, each one of them may have mentioned a figure here or there, but I can't go back to them and say, this is what was going to happen. If we meddle on the one side, what is happening on the other side? If we meddle with the law in the wrong way, or the act in the wrong way, to the detriment of the credit system in South Africa, we could destroy the whole market. Because, you know, that's also a business. It also creates jobs. It makes South Africa's economy tick. So, how are we going to adopt this act, or change it, or amend it, so that we still continue to create jobs, because that's what our portfolio wants to do, is to create jobs and make sure that we can get our economy growing. But if we take off percentages of interest rates here, or curb the market here at the bottom, what happens to the GDP on the other side? And what happens to our foreign direct investment? That is the big picture that I'm talking about. Then there are other mechanisms of funding in Africa that I think we do not apply, microfunding, that we do not apply in South Africa in the same context. The informal lenders is an issue that must be controlled, and the specific department for that must take the responsibility, because you and I know that when it is the SASSA payday, the grant payday, then we have to have laws to protect our members of the public, and they've got to sit 100 meters away, and they may not retain the people's ID books. So it is a serious thing that we've got to watch out for. We cannot encourage that market. So I'm talking towards a fine balance of how all parties can benefit from this situation. I do have a problem with how long this market, this impact assessment will take, and how will we decide what the terms of reference of that must be, and who will be the people taking the responsibility to drive this issue. If you understand what I'm saying, we've now had the meeting. Now we must go on. If we want to change it, somebody must drive it, and somebody must take the responsibility and consider everything that all the stakeholders contributed today, because a lot of valuable stuff was said. I have problems with service delivery, with where consumers have disputes with municipalities. I have problems with where I buy 100 rand worth of prepaid electricity and I only get 60 rand worth of prepaid electricity because I've got money outstanding on my account. Things like that worry me. And what really worries me is when government, and you know my story, is when government does not pay its accounts within 30 days to consumers and people that deliver services. Because if that small business is delivering a service to government, and it is not being paid within 30 days, what happens? It takes from the till, instead of keeping the business going, it takes from that money that must go back into the business to pay the salary. And eventually, because the account goes 3, 4, 5, 6 months, that whole business collapses, and it's a whole infrastructure that collapses. A good example is the taxi industry, where they transported the scholars to church. And the Department of Transport and the service providers, or the levels in between, that are not paying the taxi people on the ground, or the bus companies, that's where we have the problem. So, my last question would be, what is the cost to business as it is at the moment, and what will a change to the Act be on Example A and Example B, and eventually on the economy? Thank you.
I'm sure all presenters will respond to these comments and questions. Honourable Main.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Pardon me, my question, if my comment or whatever has been raised by members, because I've not been, as usual, as they were put in the committee, long consistent. Chairperson, I hear that we are rated number 4 in the world and all of that. I'm actually advocating for a blanket amnesty. I heard the CEO of NARPA saying that when this issue was raised, they were extra cautious. Well, I'm not a mathematician, Chairperson. I'm not up to statistics. I'm a politician. So I'm representing my constituency. The statistics to me, they say nothing. look, we've got instances where there's funding. For instance, the real municipality was funding, but it is rolled off everything that is voted by the people. But the municipality has not collapsed. The institution is still running as big as it is. It's still the city, the capital city of government, of the country, of the republic. So what harm would it do, Chairperson, if Edgar is owed 3 million? What harm would it do if Edgar is to arrive off that 3 million and we start afresh? Because, I mean, and if you look at, as I said, I will not get into statistics. The previously disadvantaged people, and I don't want to get into politics of that in this meeting.
One politician is protected from another politician.
So my point is that if you were going to do statistics, I'm not very much interested, but if you were to go into those statistics, you find that the previously disadvantaged people are the ones who are mostly affected and the ones who are barred from doing anything. So, I mean, since 1994, we have started all over. I mean, everything that has happened in the country. And I don't want to reverse the cassette. And I'm saying, what harm would it do? I'm Chairperson, if you were to go to, and because it's one of our capabilities, if you were to go to public hearings, because we'll not just amend it for the sake of amending it, we'll listen to our people, we'll mobilize our people to say that we need action. If our people are saying we want black amnesty, what harm would it do? We can start a pressure. My point is that we must start a press. Thank you.
Then after that, presenter will comment and respond.
Yes, I think my question or my comment, my comment is that Jefferson, I'd just like to hear from the presenters what their view on the few examples. I noted about 3 examples. But my question now, or rather not my comment now, is that I understand when the link is worried about the macroeconomic impact of the thing, but when you look at it, it is the ease with which people can access credit. South Africa is ranked 4th. But what does that do for South Africa? It doesn't much. It doesn't do much for us. Because the majority of the people who are in the credit portfolio are those the poor who are unable to access international loans. But we here in terms of credit rating of how does South Africa pay internationally? Yes, might be accessing credit internationally, but it does not help us here. So that we need the evidence that people who are at the long on the peripheries of the economy can access, can be in the midst of the economy. That's the objective of this issue. Talking of employment, it is the very same credit portfolio that order that the very same rating or that the credit that is taking people, some of these people out of employment. You just mentioned a person who is with is not getting a job. You just mentioned that people are unable to get jobs because of the poor rating. So it doesn't help us as far as the consent. If we can argue politically in this case. Mr. President, I do understand that on the macroeconomic scale, I do take concerns on the credit portfolio that perhaps the people, if there's an amnesty, and then we might not be aware of the indebtedness of the people or the country. Household indebtedness. Just the same as the U.S., the collapse of the economy in the U.S. was because of the centralization of the housing scheme that was toxic because we couldn't see the product because it was extra tight. But South Africa, they came back in the
specific, there's no longer securitization of those products in the bank, so that we can see how much debt banks are taking and the financial institutions. Now, in terms of the credit report, as I said, we're not going to be able to see the indebtedness of society. I just want to find out from the regulator, is there any other means that you could see how much you are indebted without being on the credit bureau or without being with the credit bureau, so that we can more or less regulate that there's not many people, or we minimize indebtedness, household debt in the country. And as I said, President, my another concern is the interest that they put on the educators and the time when the regulator or when the tribunal says, okay, we extend that you can pay this installment over 24 months instead of 6 months. But at the end of the day, you pay twice or three times the educators. What happened to the in-depling rule? I just find out from the creditors, especially, what happened to the in-depling rule? If I remember, Chairperson, it was that 10,000 rand above, you cannot charge interest that is more twice or it's more than the capital. But he left out amount less than 10,000 rand. And one of the people who are in debt are those getting amount less than 10,000 rand, of which they're not protected.
You know, I'll start with the following people who comment. Credit Provider Association, so they wanted to say something also, so you add that before you respond. Credit Bureau Association after that, then the tribunal, then the regulator, and McDonald's.
Thank you,
Honorable
Chair. The comment I omitted to make during the presentation is that from a CPA point of view, I think there's general agreement that we are desirous to have an educated and increased credibility of consumers as time goes on. And that can be a target to be set. I think it is a positive target to aim for. And if consumers are pursued or if they have bad credit records because credit providers have acted illegally, that cannot be a cause for people to be so-called blacklisted. So that just the principle, if a credit provider acted unlawfully, and due to that reason, either by overpricing or a number of other factors, and that led to somebody being negatively listed, I mean, that should not be, and that should be eliminated as far as we possibly can. We're also in agreement to say that we think that one needs further engagement on the topic and need to analyze it further. And this discussion is quite crucial to also engage the Banking Association, there's a clothing and a furniture retailers association, which also have valuable comments, would have valuable comments to make, and then also the Microfinance Association. I think it's important to engage with them because the CPA can point out how much risk in the different consumer categories. It's those associations which can explain their constituents' appetite for the different level of risk. So the CPA will point out these are the different risks. Those associations will be able to verbalize their members' appetite for the different risks. So I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you for that. Just in response to the comment on Edgar's writing off the 3 million rand, I think what will happen in practice is Edgar's would be 3 million rand poorer, if we can use the comment like that, or they will be without 3 million rand, and they would need to find a way to make up that 3 million rand. So they will add the 3 million rand, and it may only be that they add 3 rand to a million consumers, so they will need to add the 3 million rand to another product, let's call it a credit product, they will need to add that to that, and the consumers who are paying, they are going to pay the 3 million rand in the end of the day. So it's just a comment I wanted to make on it, because Edgar's will probably, and I'm using Edgar's not in a blasphemous way, I'm just using it as an example and adding on to the example that was said. So Edgar's or credit provider would probably add it to other products, and the paying consumers would then subsidize the non-paying consumers. I think that was one comment to make. on the Induplum, I think it would probably be fair to ask the National Credit Regulator to maybe just make a comment on the Induplum.
Never mind, they'll be coming.
So I leave the Induplum to them. As far as the credit industry is concerned, there is an Induplum principle, and that principle is abided by, and those things have been taken to court, and there's been outcomes of court on how the Induplum route should be implemented. So I think it has been implemented as the Act wanted it to be implemented. I don't know if there's any other question that I need to answer to. The Tshwane municipality example that was used, I think in the end of the day, they wrote off the money, but Tshwane municipality was without that money that was supposed to come in, and I think eventually it will be taxpayers' money that would need to cover for that loss of income that they have lost, and in this case we'd probably replace it by investors. Investors would need to cover it if we had used the same example in the credit environment, and I think they would maybe lose their appetite to further invest in such an environment. Thank you very much.
Before the increase, comments. I just want to share with you a friend of mine who works in the banking sector said something to me which made me think twice to put my money into the bank. I remembered my great-grandfather used to put it under the bed. I said, maybe it's better that way. He said, you know, in the bank we've got targets just like any other business. But you must make so much demand and so on. So you must make 40 million or 100 million. And where do you get this money from? Because we don't have money, it's your money. He says, as the days go by, they go to these gadgets and they say, you, we are short, eh? And then they just say, one button, administration fee, 550, to everybody. The amount that you don't check. Then after a few days, one party they see, hey, still haven't received, not near, they do one party, 750, what fee, these amounts that you don't check in the slip, you know. One day, just add all of them, 30 days, and see how much. They can tell you your account, you pay 100 rand a month with no extra fees, but just take those amounts. Rand, they get up to quite a lot in the bank as well. 2 million customers. Tell me how much that is. Credit Bureau.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman. We were talking earlier about people getting access to credit and people getting too much credit and getting in the bad from having too much credit. I think that we've got to be very careful with the amnesty, because I think the past has shown that not all, but a lot of borrowers who performed bad in the past are likely to do it again in the future. So we've got to be very careful. It's a general statement. Just some response to comments. There was something about the court making it easier or cheaper for a consumer to go in for a 2,000 rand judgment. I agree, we should have a court. Maybe the regulator could make a NCR court for consumers to get judgments rescinded and get clearance certificates. I also think that from a credit bureau perspective, I don't think people are aware enough of a dispute process. If someone's got a judgment that's longer than 5 years, it shouldn't be on the credit bureau because there's a limit. We can only keep it for 5 years, then it's gone, no more. And a person can also go get a judgment rescinded, come to the credit bureau with a certificate, and we have to remove it. We have 20 days. You can come to the credit bureau, phone the credit bureau, we have 20 days to make an outcome. And if we don't do that, the consumer can go to the ombud, and then he will make a ruling. It'll either be he will make a ruling. So we under the law, we have to make a decision within 20 days. So I think that the consumer doesn't know enough about the dispute process, because If adverse information is on the bureau, it's gone after 2 years. So the information gets wiped all the time. You know, I just don't think people know about it. And I think if someone's got a legitimate problem, they can get it resolved. You know, we just got to get people to know this, so they can register disputes. The one thing I quite liked, which came out, was rules for blacklisting. If we could create rules for blacklisting and then publish those, people would know about it. Then it will cause people to behave better. I think that's a good one. And once again, the education thing, I think, is very important. There was made mention of microfinance sector. I think that's one, if you look internationally, like in Africa, Uganda, they've got a big, vibrant sector where unemployed people can go and borrow money. Let's say, to borrow money to buy 3 oranges, go back next day, give them money, have money to get 4 oranges, to build a business like that. I think we South Africa should do a lot more in the microfinance sector. I think we're not doing enough. It's very, very small. We can do a lot more. There's a lot of people out there that are not on the curriculum. If the microfinance sector grew, we could do a lot more. I think that's very important to look at. Informal lenders, I agree, we need to... We've got to do something about informal lenders. Maybe Madam Regulator, we're going to look into that. And then the other comment about what will happen if we interfere with our financial services sector and interfering with the financial infrastructure. I haven't got an answer for that, but we'd have to do some detailed analysis and look into it, because I don't think we'd want to mess with what's working. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. I will deal with the questions as they were posed by the honourable members of the committee. The first question related to blacklisting and people not being able to find a job because of an adverse listing on a credit bureau. There are 2 responses we have to that question. The first response is whether it was ever intended for a person's credit information to count in their search or attempt to find employment. I can't see it in the purpose of the legislation. And I have also at some point in my life studied labor law. And as far as I know, it's also not a bona fide employment qualification. So it's very interesting that it's used in that way. But as I said earlier on, we are an adjudicative entity, so it's not really our role to express a view on that issue. But just as a by the way, I think that that is something that seriously has to be considered. Of course, if a person is in a role where they're handling finances, where judgment around financial management is important, it might be a requirement, or it might be a consideration for employment, but I don't think it can be a wholesale application to a person's search or attempt to find employment. In terms of the Health and Racket Club example that the Honourable Member mentioned, of course, that is exactly where the issues around whether a person is actually indebted for a certain amount becomes very key. And the responses the regulator put forward around prescription and how prescription regulation should change is perhaps quite pertinent and very important. When it comes to the issue of the induplum rule that the Honourable Nguni mentioned on 2 occasions, when we look at debt rearrangement agreements that come before us, we do the calculations to determine that if we award a debt rearrangement agreement, that the consumer won't fall into a situation where the amount repaid exceeds the capital amount, the cost and the interest and the charges. And we do make that application, and we do refuse consent orders should we get a debt rearrangement agreement that breaches that very fundamental rule. In terms of the informal sector, the issue around judgment, information communication technology is very advanced. There's really no reason, and now speaking as a pure layperson, why it kind of default into a system that certain things disappear off a system after a certain period of time. It's a matter of programming, and but then again, as I say, I must post a disclaimer, Who am I to say I'm a lay person, I'm not an ICT person? Honourable Chairperson Gamedi, you talked about the assessment of affordability, and you talked about if there's something concrete and objective that speaks to what?
Just a minute, I'm sorry. It will be injustice for us as representatives of the people for the lady to say, I'm nobody, I'm just a lady. It's a woman's month. She's very professional, she's a very good person, she's intellectual, that's why she's here. So she must not look down on herself.
Thank you, Honourable Member, but I do appreciate my shortcomings with ICT. My colleagues will attest to that. Honourable Chairman Gamedi, you spoke about the assessment and affordability issues. That's exactly been a problem for us. How do you know, what does a person, a family of five need to survive when you look at affordability to repay a certain loan? And having concrete guidelines around those issues will be most helpful to everybody, I believe. And I think that would definitely take us much, much further into making decisions that would be sound and making decisions that will actually help people and not draw them down even further than where they already are. Then in terms of the approach that's been put forward by one of the honorable members around the amnesty of saying, start somewhere and realize that solutions are not necessarily perfect. I fully can endorse and will endorse that, and I think my colleagues from the tribunal similarly. It's not something that happens and you just have a perfect solution on your lap one day. It is something everybody has to work towards and see what are the ramifications of all the different stakeholders. This is why we're coming and we say we're just sharing what we have seen, and we're asking, can we all together look at a solution that will help these people we already see are in very, very challenging circumstances and are very much more vulnerable to abuse and exploitation than other people, perhaps. And we can't also say that even very much with that much conviction, because our numbers are just not as many as the industry reflect. In terms of the big picture that the Honourable Van Langen spoke about, around credit bureaus and how anything, any changes, any amendments that are made, how that's going to impact, I think it has to be carefully considered. I think there has to be a balance, because this is what the legislation talks about. It talks about the balance of the rights and the obligations of all the different stakeholders. In terms of the information, and lenders controlling information, we have specific provisions in legislation dealing with that. Section 72.1c of the Credit Act deals specifically with the possibility of investigations to ensure that information is actually accurate and credible. In terms of the impact assessments, the time it will take, the terms of reference, who's supposed to do it, who's the driver of the process, I suppose that is all going to come out in the process of a concrete proposal being developed and driven forward. In terms of the service delivery disputes within municipalities, yeah, we have had first-hand experience around that, and it's a very difficult and very complex issue, something that we deal with another hat on in terms of the Consumer Protection Act. But obviously it does have credit implications, because when a person doesn't repay his or her debt, it can become a credit agreement, because it can become incidental credit, because a person may have to pay interest on the amount that remains outstanding. And then it falls within this domain of credit agreement. In terms of government not paying, that is something as an organization that we take very seriously. It is something that as chairperson of the tribunal, I keep personal track of to ensure that people are paid within the 30 days. And I'm very proud to say that we have a 17-day turnaround on the payment of all our suppliers. and we are constantly driving that period down. Let me see, talking about my colleague will speak to this question because I've lost track of my thinking around that. This was the question about the what would the cost be to do business all these changes, the amnesty and so forth, and I think also that would be one of the things that they have to be carefully considered. I don't think from our field that we would be in any position to really make a contribution towards that debate. Then we talked about the last question I've noted here. Is there another way of tracking indebtedness? In my presentation, I did refer to Section 69 of the National Credit Act, which talks about the establishment of a credit type bureau structure by the National Credit Regulator. And I did pose the question, is that perhaps a possibility? I don't know. That would have, of course, very, very serious cost implications and implications on the resources of the credit regulator. So I'm hoping that I could contribute to the questions and to the discussion. Thank you.
A regulator, both of you would get a bite.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Chair, I'll talk to the negatively listed consumers who are unable to find jobs. The act is very clear in terms of, you know, the source of, in terms of regulating credit bureaus, where they can source information from and where they, you know, who they can send it to. And as the previous speaker, the chairperson of the tribunal indicated, in instances where the job requires, you know, somebody who is going to be handling finances or cash and has their, you know, what's the word? Position of or that person is in a position of trust, then that information becomes, you know, relevant. However, with regards to any other job, there's no need, you know, for that information to be used against, you know, a candidate who is looking for a job. But we have seen that in some instances that has been done. And at the moment, we are busy investigating, you know, one credit bureau around that issue. So it is. There are some, you know, credit bureaus who still use the information for positions that don't require, you know, the handling of cash or positions of trust. And in terms of guidelines, Stephen Logan earlier on did make mention of the fact that we have started the process of drafting principle-based guidelines. These will not be rule-based guidelines because the last thing that we want to do as a regulator is to start saying, you know, make sure that the consumer walks home with, takes home 30% of his or her income. We don't want to go there because we feel that's a business decision that must be taken by credit providers. And in terms of the National Register of Credit Agreements, we have started specing that register. We will be consulting with the industry, and the Act is also very clear in terms of what, you know, this register should hold in terms of information, the content of the information. So we will be consulting with the industry. We have started specing it. We waited because we needed to incorporate it. To incorporate that within our new IT, you know, development, and we only signed the contract, you know, 2 months ago with a new service provider who's going to provide the new IT system. I will hand over to Steve to address issues around the Indicum rule. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, the Indicum rule has been dramatically changed in our law by the codification of the Indicum rule with modification in terms of section 103 of the National Credit Act. Whereas previously the Indicum rule provided, as honourable members may know, that interest could only be added to the extent of the same amount of the principal debt following default, and that to use an example, the and further interest could be added. The National Credit Act does not allow for that. The National Credit Act provides a strict limit of 100% on interest and all collection charges. So it's a far better remedy than the Induplama rule ever was. And fortunately, the Supreme Court of Appeal has now held that that is what was intended by the legislature and has given effect to that situation and bolstered that position in our law. So, as the chairperson of the National Consumer Tribunal mentioned earlier, it is incumbent on all parties to make sure that the codified Induplama rule, the changed section 103, is given effect to in all instances. There were several comments made, but very few that I can actually answer. However, it might be worth stating that with regards to reckless lending, the potential prosecution of reckless lending and the sanction for reckless lending that you mentioned earlier, Honourable Chair, presently, in terms of the National Credit Act, reckless lending is something that can only be brought before a court for determination when raised by a debt counsellor. There could be opportunity going forward to provide for a different way of treating reckless lending and provide for a similar sanction that already exists, such as forfeiture, which already exists in the National Credit Act. But it's very difficult at the moment for consumers to gain redress for reckless lending. And consequently, we have a situation where, from a legal perspective, there is a remedy, but it's extremely difficult to obtain. The number of impaired consumers, being 46% of credit active consumers, would indicate that there must have been some level of reckless lending, as well as reckless borrowing. And unfortunately, there have been very, very few cases where reckless lending has actually been brought before the courts or resulted in forfeiture or repayment of any sort to the consumer. It may be possible to deal with that in another forum, but it's unlikely that that could be dealt with by the credit information, proposed credit information amnesty, because it relates to not to credit information per se, but to the underlying debt. The Credit Providers Association made a helpful comment that we should include the Banking Association of South Africa, the Microfinance South Africa, the Retailing and Furniture Retailing and Clothing Retail Association. We are absolutely of the view that they need to be consulted, and we wish to place that on record, that we intend to consult with them in detail with regards to the proposed amnesty. Mention was made by the National Consumer Tribunal that they have found many instances of overcharging of interest. The National Credit Regulator is tasked with making sure that the caps of interest are properly enforced, and I'm sure that the National Credit Regulator will be taking steps to investigate this further and make sure that overcharging of interest is not a conduct that escapes prosecution. With respect to the terms of reference of the impact assessment, that's something that would have to be set out in some detail. It's my understanding that should Select Committee, Honourable Select Committee, endorse that impact assessment go ahead, that the principal and credit regulator would definitely draft terms of reference, would be very, very detailed, and make sure that there would be wide consultation and appropriate consultants, such as actuaries, might be involved in doing that work. The question was raised as to the cost of business of the proposed amnesty. There's no doubt that the intention of both the National Credit Regulator regulator and the Department of Trade and Industry is to minimize the cost to business, to make sure that business is not adversely affected in a significant way. The credit industry, however, needs to understand that they are to some degree responsible for the state of credit consumers of credit being so poorly at the moment. And consequently, there is going to be some sort of cost. It is about making sure that all parties to the credit industry work out a fair way going forward to ensure that the credit information that is retained for the benefit of consumers. And that consumers who have paid their accounts on time and have a good credit history are not adversely impacted by a proposed credit amnesty. The Department of Trade and Industry has given considerable thought to the term amnesty and whether that would include an understanding around a blanket amnesty. And if it were possible to provide for a blanket amnesty without undermining the credit industry and without undermining the economy of South Africa, it might have been something that would have been received a lot more attention. But it felt that a blanket amnesty, in the sense of writing off debt, would potentially write off billions of debt, not millions of debt. And consequently, it would not be feasible. It would actually undermine the economy as a whole. Much so, the sentiment is understood, and I think that everybody here in this honorable house would understand that there are many consumers who have not obtained financial freedom despite the political freedoms that they have obtained. And it is up to us and incumbent upon the regulator, the government, and indeed this house to try to whatever extent possible to ameliorate the effects of poor decisions made both by credit providers and borrowers, and try to give relief where it can be given. I think that most of the other issues have been addressed, but please remind me if there are any questions that we still need to address.
Yeah, before McDonald, just to raise a record that we had invited the financial sector to the financial charter treatment committee, the different view that they're not the correct structure to attend this meeting. So we'll still engage with them, but we take note that the microfinance, clothing and retail association, we need to engage with them. Those are the four key sectors that we need to engage with. McDonald's.
Chairman and honorable members and the whole house, I will tackle some of them since there is a lot of repetition, but from a different perspective. There was a question on the issue of saying when will the amendment come or the review of the legislation. Talking as the DTI, which needs to propose legislative amendment to this house, to the portfolio committee and this house, and after consultation with the stakeholders, we are saying we are dependent on this consultation to be completed and then take whatever the outcome is and then propose a legislative amendment. I cannot answer when will this consultation be concluded. But if I can leave the matter then. The other issue is that the informal lenders must be dealt away with. I've got an example which may try to answer the question. It is true that informal lending is bad. It is true. I'm concerning that. But there is this argument of, say, counterfeit goods, piracy, as an example. There is this argument of saying, if the industry is not well run or overpricing, say, of tickets for sportsmen and sportswomen, they are very expensive at Edgar's, as an example, then you are pushing people to go to the informal sector. And the issue is that how should we then fight piracy and counterfeiting? Maybe to reduce price and also to clean our own house, the industry itself. So that's how I can respond to that issue of, so I'm not giving credit to informal sector. I'm saying maybe the industry needs to look at itself. Reckless lending and borrowing, we agree that there should be a legislation review that covers both sides to punish all the bad people in the lending or borrowing with the adjective reckless. Like in company law, we have regular trading. It's an offense. Even here, I think if we are persuaded by this consultation, we can go that route of punishing all both parties ahead that are not clean. The other issue on the standards, to say, come with standards to regulate the credit providers so that they can have standards. My colleague, without contradicting here, said, yes, they are drafting this and that. I'm not contradicting here, but personally, I don't have a mandate here, but I'm not a fan of this charter, as an example, or codes, per se. I'm not a fan of that. Maybe I'm trigger-happy. I want things to be legislated to give certainty. Self-regulation, we have implemented it generally. Generally, it is not working. So therefore, maybe as a trigger person, I would like these standards to be legislated and be enforced, not on self-regulatory basis. Amnesty, how much is it contributing, say, to jobs, investment, and the like? There was this issue of coming with this new legislation, the Credit Act. Chairperson of the tribunal will confirm or disconfirm. When we were doing this act, there was an uproar to say, no, it will scare the investors in the sector. It was a big uproar. And then we tried to argue and face a satisfying. And then when the U.S. fell in this sector, we know the cases. People were happy that we were protected by this act. They were very ill. And then by analogy, therefore, he's saying, yes, impact assessment and everything. By analogy, this amnesty can contribute to alleviation of life of the distressed people in the tent. It can contribute a lot. So, but how this house and stakeholders need to consult with each other and then tell the DTI to say, change your legislation, make proposal to Parliament, then we'll be the first people to run. So the real issue, the impact assessment, terms of reference, they have talked to it, but I conferred with them to say, can't we finish within 6 months? But with a writer that we won't conclude anything per se without this consultation coming into being. But 6 months, I think, is enough to deal with that issue. And then the others are not within my competence, but government to pay within 30 days. I'm only talking to the, on behalf of the DTI. DTI pays within 30 days. It was confirmed by the small business when we consulted with them on something else. So we pay within 30 days. And generally, I think we have talked a lot of issues right together with the regulators' response. that in the hand of my man on decision chain. Thanks.
Thanks very much. There is a contribution from Consumer Forum, which is we know them as Consumer Forum, but it's Consumer Fair. Was a fair in play or in exhibition, I don't know. Just give us a brief of this so that we can engage on that.
Yeah, we have joined forces of moving away from the National Consumer Forum because we are being confused with all the other National Consumer Commissions, tribunals, councils, and so, Consumer Fair is appropriate because we have a publication called Consumer Fair and our brand is already well established with consumers, and the fair is definitely for fair play within the consumer sector. My name is Imran Mukadam, I'm the Working Fair Coordinator of the National Consumer Forum, or now called Consumer Fair. We are a consumer organization that is dedicated to promotion, protection and consumer rights and interests in our country, and we work to assert and defend the rights of consumers as stated in the United Nations Guidelines for Consumer Protection of 1985 and the Consumer Protection Act of our country. Our role is to educate consumers about the rights and responsibilities, to lobby on consumer issues, speak out on a range of challenges that consumers, especially lower income earners, face in their daily lives. We are affiliates of the Consumers International Federation of over 260 consumer organizations in more than 120 countries. Honorable Chair, we welcome the opportunity to provide the Select Committee with our views on the matter of trade amnesty. We regret that this public hearing on such an important matter was organized at such short notice, and therefore, unfortunately, we don't have a proper presentation. And we also have not had enough opportunity to consult with our members and stakeholders to get their input. So we would want this consultation process to continue so that we can give further input after due consultation with our various stakeholders as an organization. There are simply too many problems that our consumers are confronted with when dealing with credit bureaus, credit grants in the courts of this country. And as such, this is an important and emotional matter for many consumers in the country. We strongly believe that consultation on credit amnesty should not be rushed and should involve all stakeholders. The outcome of this process should definitely be better than the results achieved in the previous amnesty of 2006-2007. Our consumers must be able to exercise their rights and responsible and affordable credit. We feel strongly that both government and the credit industry should be able to share with us the lessons that were learned during the 2007 amnesty. For the proposed amnesty to have a positive impact on the economy of the country and not to undermine the rights of consumers, it is imperative that the comprehensive impact assessment of such an initiative be conducted without delay. If this is not done, we face the risk of yet again introducing a program that will not be able to effectively address one of the burning issues facing our consumers in South Africa. We all know the debt counseling program has been beset by many problems since its inception. To this day, our offices continue to receive numerous complaints from consumers about debt review processes. These complaints are filed in the main by consumers under debt review who have little or no financial education or knowledge of the law and have no means to acquire proper legal representation. What will be the fate of consumers under debt review once the new amnesty is introduced? Another thorny issue is the one of late payments to small and medium businesses that resulted in blacklistings of thousands of our consumers. Small business development in our country is constantly undermined and entrenched by a culture of late payments.
as we pointed out in our submission to the Policy Board of Treasury way back in 2005, late payment has proved to be a regular pillar of small to medium business in our country. Without resolving this matter, thousands of our consumers will continue to be grabbed back as to residual property and etc. This is our formal submission. I've made some notes which I would want to also share with us if I'm allowed, from the discussions that have been carried on.
Yeah, maybe you, because of this submission, first we would like to apologize for the feeling that you were invited very late. As a committee, we would like to apologize and to stress that we will still be continuing with this process, all the provinces, so we will get the whole process, so that we are ready. We'll allow you also to make a few comments that you want to make, but the submission is noted, and you can see, I think you heard also, that most of the issues that are here have already been raised. Are the very big issues of SMME, those people on the depth of review, these are the issues that have already been raised. So in every case, we're speaking with one voice, we're identifying the very big challenges, all of us. But you can make a comment.
Okay, with regards to the issue of malicious listings, we've experienced in the Cape Town office of consumers complaining that call center debt collectors would phone, and when the consumer says, I'm not able to speak to you right now, then immediately that goes to the negative listing, malicious listings. We're saying that, again, reinforcing what has been said earlier, about the rules of listing and blacklisting, and that is a core area that needs attention. That there's quite a lot of abuse by cable providers and suppliers of the ability to blacklist in a way as a punitive means instead of addressing the core issues. Another core issue that I would submit and also mention earlier is the cost of debt and high interest rates. the old system that the weaker your rating, the higher your interest, is actually penalizing those that can least afford and putting them even further into debt, and that needs to be looked at as an issue that is really, it's a system that rewards those that have and penalizes those that don't have, and that in effect actually perpetuates this widening gap between rich and poor, so that the rich have access to lower interest, and the poor are paying higher interest and maximum interest, which has also been mentioned in the deliberations this morning. So that's an area that would be a core issue. So amnesty would solve a lot of the problems, but a lot of the current crisis can be related to the high interest rates and the maximum interest rates that is being charged versus somebody that owns a home that can go and take out a bond and pay a fully debt at 8%, and somebody that can't, that has to pay 32% or 30% interest, and that exacerbates the debt crisis for that individual only because he doesn't have access to the kind of resources that somebody that has a bond on his home and has some debt that he needs. So that is something that has to be looked at. And then another point that I think needs to be raised is that the whole default is the industry around defaulting. Default payments is an industry on its own, that you have debt collectors that thrive on default, that you have debt counselors that thrive on default, that you have banks that thrive on every time you don't have money in the bank and the penalty that goes through 159 for a mispayment. And so these are all aggravating factors for the crisis that indebted consumers find themselves in, that needs to be looked at. How do you alleviate that? How can we alleviate the penalties that are being imposed on consumers that are defaulting? It's like a wounded animal and the vultures are circling, just waiting to pounce, and we need to get out of that syndrome where consumers become victims only because they're going through that bad luck syndrome, that bad luck consumer that was referred to earlier, that when they get in that position, they are now encircled by this industry that now comes down on them It's something that needs to be looked at as well in a broader, bigger scheme of things. And then, importantly, as consumer field, the National Consumer Forum, the role of consumer interest groups in consumer education and how much of effort is being placed by all the stakeholders in empowering consumer interest groups and building consumer interest groups to provide education, because that is sorely lacking, despite the fact that the Consumer Protection Act makes provision for consumer interest groups to play that role. There's been no real government support of consumer interest groups in fighting for better conditions for consumers and also for the process of consumer education. And then the growth of the informal debt sector is indicative of a system that has failed. The whole credit system is failing, and it's forcing 5 million South Africans into the informal, into the clutches of loan sharks, into the clutches of people that charge 100% interest. And it's a failure not on the part of consumers alone, it's a failure on the part of the regulators, it's a failure on the part of the credit providers, it's a failure on us as a society that we are taking, allowing our most vulnerable to become victims even further after they've already gone. So they're really down and down and out, and they're now being fed to the other vultures on the other side of the fence. So this is also something that that needs to be addressed. And then, most importantly, the access to justice for consumers that are not financially and legally literate, where judgments are being just awarded willy-nilly without proper representation, without consumers having access to representation, where the justice system doesn't allow for consumers to access proper legal representation. They're already down and out. They already don't have access. Where are they going to get money to pay a lawyer from? Where are they going to get money to? So there should be mechanisms in place for consumers to defend input against judgments and against these issues. And I don't think there's enough emphasis on that, and we will not put that position forward as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that contribution. Would anyone want to make a comment on that? Honourable Baird.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and apologies for being out of the meeting. I actually ran to a support meeting. I hope my questions haven't been asked. Thank you. I just wanted to know the amount that was put forward. I think it was discrimination, because there's lots of people, they just much higher amounts, and so if we sort of have an amount where we cut off, what happens to the other people, you know, if you say we want the embassy for South African people, then also what contributes to poverty. I've just realized while sitting here in this meeting, there's so many people educated with higher degrees and various other educational qualities, and they cannot find a job because they are on the IT system. And you find that people, as soon as they go out and they check you, then they see, okay, no, there's nothing wrong with you, but your creditworthiness don't qualify you to get a specific job. So I think once we get the embassy, many of our people will be employed, and we probably will be part of the history. Then also I've heard about judgments, 500% and less. Many people in my constituency, chairperson, as mentioned, that they are, have got judgments, experts, you name them. For 500 less. Many of these come from medical bills, where people on medical aid, and for something like 60 grand. Myself, I'm on a 6,000 grand threatened that they will put me on credit bureau for dangers that have been made. I don't have dangers, but some of the community, they actually sign documents with doctors and so on, professionals, and you end up like submitting bills, and the medical aid don't pay, and you end up being the victim. Now, I know it's lots of education that needs to take place, but unfortunately, many people out there are not aware of it. Then also, I want to know, most of these cases, it's particular, for the people don't know, I think one of the presenters mentioned that we need to educate people so that they can know when there's disputes and things like that, because some people don't know how long a judgment in adverse and things like that are on the system. And then some of these legal eagles, they also make lots of money when people go and say, I'm on the system. I've got one specific person in my community that's been on Credit Bureau for 10 years. Now, I'm surprised because it's at least wiped off after 5 years. What does that include? So maybe somewhere in the system there's something that's also not right. I also want to know, Chairperson, false information, how is that disadvantage? I was in a bank once where the lady said that people jump from bank to bank institutions and they provide information. They don't realize that once you've been to one bank in the morning, you go 10 o'clock to another bank, immediately they will see that you've been there. And every time they want to do a listing and they ask questions, and you think you didn't make it in the one bank, so you start lying in the other, and immediately they pick you up, and it's actually a disadvantage. Thank you very much.
Anyone who feels wants to comment on what has been said? Oh, you still want to? I'm sorry. Your glasses and your eyes aren't moving, you see. You must remove your glasses. Okay, I'll now start
ringing. Thank you, Chairperson. When we were talking about what industries must be added to the list, I think the insurance industry must be added to the list too. And it goes about life insurance, it goes about funeral policies, it goes about the reinsurance of, and this is also one of our jobs, the reinsurance of companies that sell funeral policies, because they don't do that. They reckon their cash flow is good enough and they can use that cash to buy something else, and it's very difficult to regulate that one or to supervise it. And I have actually complained about lots of similar irregularities in my constituency, and I think I must talk to the right person today to resolve that issue. It also boils down to the fact that people are, with the insurance industry, it comes off their salary, and in the end of say 8,000 rand a month, they take home 2,000 rand a month, because there's a large number of policies that must come off their name. And I don't know if the system provides for that, where proper checks can be done and that a person may not take more than X number of insurance policies because they simply can't afford it. And then I've just SMS'd one of my people in my constituency. She says she's still blacklisted, she paid all her debt, and she has paid the firm 4,200 rand to clear her name, and she still cannot buy anything because she's still blacklisted. So where do we go from here? Thank you.
Yeah, I tell that member that I just paid 4,000. I never thought of that.
Yeah, if we knew that, we could have prevented these people from coming here today. But then it would have been a thriving business for you. No, Chair, we want to thank the presenters for the answers. I was just held up by one of the higher officers. That's why I was late for the meeting. during my not the highest office. When we close our eyes, on the whole thing. But you know the fundamental thing about the industry, and I've heard that the industry are raising their concern about the blanket industry and that. But the fundamental thing about the industry is, or about this amnesty, what we want to, or what I think what we seek to achieve, is that we should also get, in terms of the judicial system, into responding or into buying in into this amnesty. Because without them, because they are the people, the magistrates, they are the people that sign the judgment forms. They are the people that authorize the judgment, whether it's judges or whether it's magistrates, under Section 65 of the
Magistrates Act, they do that. Irrespective of what is now attorney, we also need to get the law society into our discussion. Because an attorney goes to court, rightfully as the gentleman has said, the tracing agent can't get hold of you, they give it over to the attorney, attorney goes to court, they issue one notice. After that, after the issuing of one notice, they go to court, they tell the magistrate, no, no, everything has been done, Your Honor. We can't trace the atoms or anything like that, and that's why we need judgment to be given in his absence. Now, our laws are very vague because you can give a judgment, a court can give a judgment in the absence of credit or a debtor. That judgment can be given in the absence of that debtor. Now, these attorneys go to court and say, no, we can't find you. Sorry, we've done our utmost best, but there's no way we can find you. But sometimes people go to the civil court. And they says, but can I speak to the magistrate? The lawyer says, no, 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 you don't speak, just fill in the form, your expenses and income, take it to the judge, you go in there, judge says, how much can you pay? Is that what you get paid? Okay, that's it. Pay that amount, that's what it's paid. Now, I know that at one stage that the bank used to repossess, and there was a story last week, over the weekend, of a house that was bought for 199,000 and it was sold for 1,000 rand. Repossessed and sold by the bank for 1,000 rand. Now, I mean, I'm not being told that the bank can take that loss. Somewhere along the line they've got underlying and underwriting insurance. They've got a cushion, that's why they are doing that. And that lady and I've been worse off than been helped because now she has to pay the balance of 198,000 plus interest on that debt. The house has been sold for 1,000 and she hasn't got accommodation. She must now find alternative accommodation. So you see the spiral that people are just going downward into this type of thing. And that's why it's important, sir, that really, because it is a downward spiral that people are going down. Instead of coming up of the traces. And then you do get some of these devious credit, what do they call them, that's supposed to help people. Debt counselors. That says, no, look, fine. What we'll do, we'll go for an administration order. Now that person takes another 100 light years to pay off such an administration order. And it's not even helping. No, it's not helping none at all. So we have to have a review of the NCA because some of these legal people have found loopholes also in the NCA. They have found loopholes in the NCA. So we have to have a review or a real look at the NCA and with your permission if we can ask our learned good friend Super McDonald to once again give us a review of the NCA, so that these loopholes, it's senseless we go and we push for everything, but then there's a lot of loopholes that will prevent amnesty to be given, or reasonable amnesty, or what they normally call what is that thing in Afrikaans, reasonable. So that all doubts can be removed, Jay. Because once we get all role players on board, then we can sing from one sheet and sing one chorus. But I think Section 65 of the Magistrates Act also need to be re-looked at. Really, we should get that the department to come and brief us on Section 65, and if it need be. I mean, we don't have to even go to the portfolio committee. We ourselves can bring in private bills and all that, and we'll do it. We can even initiate legislation from this side of Parliament, consists of 2 houses. So from this house, we can even do that. Thank you, Chair.
Your comments,
please.
Thank you, Chair.
And it was under one.
May I speak to the question of the amount of the judgment and those people who would not qualify for the amnesty because it's a significant amount, that more than the 10,000 limit or the 50,000 limit. The intention with regards to the judgments, as I expressed when I made my presentation, was to catch as many of the judgments as possible, and to provide a means going forward to have the judgments removed more easily following settlement, so that you would not have this need to go through the courts and apply for rescission. The latest statistical data from Statistics South Africa provides insight. If you take the number of judgments and you divide that into the total value of the judgments, then you can get an average, and that average is approximately 10,000 rand for judgments taken in the magistrate's court. And so we have based our figures for the proposed amnesty around that figure to ensure that the credit information or the judgment information is removed, is 90%, if not higher, of all judgment information would be captured and would be removed on the basis of the proposed amnesty. Thanks, Chair. I'd just like to answer the one question about there was a consumer that was still 10 years on the credit bureau. I think that's more likely in that administration order, because that's retained until 10 years. A judgment for money is taken off after 5 years, and if it's, so it could be an administration order. The best would be for the consumer to contact the credit bureau, and they'll be able to help them with the process. The other question was that there's someone who's blacklisted and got a certificate, clearance certificate. That person must contact the credit bureau to lodge a dispute, and then that blacklist will be taken off. So we need to contact the credit bureau. The other question was about insurance. Included that is included in the affordability assessment. So should the total cost of credit includes insurance. And then the other one was about the debt counsellors. You know, I think we need to educate consumers before they go into a debt counselling process, because I do agree, when someone's in debt counselling, they can be there for 20 years and they can't access new credit. So I think we need to educate consumers to stop going to debt counsellors unless it's the absolute, absolute last resort. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. The one question about the consumer bureaus. You know, the problem that we have with the consumer bureaus, you contact one, and they tell you, no, it's not with us. For argument's sake, you contact TransUnion, or TransWorld. TransWorld says, no, it's not with us, it's with Experian. Experian says, no, it's not with us, it's with CompuScan. So isn't there one central point? Or that you can say that, look, this person has got a certificate. I mean, we experience it in our positions. That this person has got a certificate, please take him or her. And the other thing with the bank says, no, it has to state whether the house has been sold, that we have recovered our money with interest and all that. The judgment has to stay on until 30 years, or the name stays on until 30 years. Now, that doesn't make sense of what you've been telling us and what the bank has said to us. Because I've had a person, his house was on the verge of being repossessed, he paid everything, including the municipal arrears, the banking arrears, all that, he sold the house. The bank said, no, I can't take off your name, it has to go, we have to get a letter from court, and we are not giving permission for that, for you to apply to court, to have the judgment accepted.
I'll start with the president.
I think Stephen can talk about the judgment process, why the bank's not releasing it, but the judgment will stay on the credit bureau only for 5 years. After 5 years, wiped, and then the consumer has no more judgments on it, so he can go to a bank and apply for, he'll have a clean, he'll be a gold client. So that does get wiped out. So there must be some technical problem why the bank's refusing it. I think Stephen can answer that question.
But once he got the clearance certificate, he comes to the credit bureau and we will lodge a dispute, and we have by law 20 days to get back to him and sort it out. And then the clearance bureau then, once it's sorted out, we send that file to the other bureaus. So that information is shared. And I think there's probably that individual case, and then the consumer must know that if they don't get help from the bureau within the 20 days, and the bureau says, no, it's not, they can't find this, and the consumer can go to the credit ombuds, and then the credit ombuds decision is final. So he will rule either way. So there is recourse, and it works well. So I think the consumer must just make a noise at the credit bureau as a starting point.
The confusion regarding the 5 years and 30 years is very simple to explain. In terms of the Conscription Act, no judgment can be collected for more than 30 years. Judgment debts prescribe after 30 years, so you cannot collect them for more than 30 years. However, that's different from the data retention period on credit bureaus, which is 5 years. So what a bank will often say is, no, our judgment stands for 30 years, meaning that they can collect on it for up to 30 years. But it will only display on a credit record for up to 5 years. That's the difference. Now, our submission is that a bank should not be able to withhold consent to a rescission of judgment. I have thought, speaking in my personal capacity, not on behalf of the NCR or the DTI, I have fought a battle for at least 10 years, particularly with Standard Bank, as to consent regarding rescission of judgment. And it is only very recently that some banks have agreed to consent to the rescission of judgment. And that is a long-winded process to usually get a consent out of them. That's why we would like to proceed with the abandonment of judgment, so that is a requirement following settlement of a judgment debt, and that will result in automatic removal with the credit bureau. Now, with regards to you won't need me. You will not.
No, he did tell me that he will refer you to someone.
There was some other question, I think. No. Okay. Apologies.
No, thanks. The issue of awareness campaign, especially in the awareness campaign, I think we need to do more. There are happening, but there are policies. The other one, review of the NCA, we agree, probably there will also be something in the area of that company, but I'm just saying in general. And then the magistrate court, section 65, in our presentation with the Department of Justice in particular should be consulted. We can do a consequential amendment, or we confer with them, or both. So we have undertaken that, but there should be 36 sections that we need to tamper with. Section 67 should be one of it, including the High Court, the rules of the High Court on the abandonment and the rescission of the sanctions.
I don't want to make comments on the presenters.
I just want to make a comment. I think the Honourable Member asked a question regarding the insurance, and I don't think it relates to credit life. I think the principle that you referred to was that people get overextended insurance, so they, you know, if they, heaven forbid, but if they should pass away, the rest of the family is stinking rich. But while they're living, they almost don't have food to eat. So I think that is a principle that's dealt with in the FICE legislation, and not obviously not in the Credit Act. And I mean, that's the area where that should be addressed, I presume. And I'm not an expert on the area. I just thought I'd add that.
My last comment is on what the CEO of MDR said, which is a concern to me, position of trust. And it's a serious concern to me, because we've got, I don't know how to put it, but civil servants all of them want to believe that they're in a position of trust. Now, once you classify a certain grouping as in a position of trust, by implication, you mean the rest are not in a position of trust. So it will act into their mind and into their action. Hence, then, we will all have better and good service from everybody, even service. Only that category is in a position of trust. Maybe we'll take that further as we discuss. What really do we need and what do we mean? What type of people do we mean when we say they can be blacklisted or should be blacklisted? Because it creates a conscious question, you know, and a moral question. You apply for a job, you say, no, I want a job that is not a job, that does not need some trust. So that they won't check my blacklist. So it will be some of the things going forward. Now, on the way forward, as we move forward, there are issues which I think we need to take forward. The issue of consumers under debt review, as we deal with the issue of amnesty. The issue of comfort to business. We cannot just throw it away. We need to put it on the table, have discussions with business, so that they have some comfort about this amnesty that we want. The issue of all these matters going to court, as Stephen was saying now, that certain matters, maybe when we deal with the review of the Act, that there's no need that we go to court. The NPR is there as one of the proposals. The issue of credit history, you know, we still haven't found common ground. Keep it, wipe it out, and so on. Some people do feel that it is necessary to keep the credit history, but not to wipe it out. But you can have amnesty, but the credit history must be there. The issue of informal lenders, that is versus introspection by formal ones. How do we deal with them? As we're going to deal with the review of the Act, I think we need to do something. And how do the formal lenders do their job? And generally, the issue of amnesty, we touched on it, whether it's going to be blanket as we move forward, as we talk, or it's going to be targeted. Or some people say we've got to be very careful when we deal with this issue of amnesty so that we don't rock the boat. So these are the issues that we're raising. There's it was raised that maybe in 6 months' time, we must give ourselves some time frames of work. Let us start working, including in the 6 months' time, the committee's work of doing public hearings in the province and so on. So 6 months' time, we're giving ourselves that next we meet, we should be reporting and starting even with the review of the Act. We should be having all our tasks now in one row. But unless I'm leaving something, can someone also add on this issue? Is there something that I've left out that we need to take forward? Anything that you want to add?
Honorable, what about education? Consumer education.
Now, consumer education, really, it's something we don't have to wait 6 months for that. It should just start today. And we hope to get a program, and this committee must be using programs and campaigns where consumer education is taking place and how we can calculate for that. Honorable Van Lingen?
Where does legal aid come into being? What is their domain? Are they in any way
can they give advice in, or assistance in this case?
I think legally they are also covered under the Law Society, but I've never seen, I've never heard a legal aid lawyer taking on a civil case. Stephen?
Well, I would suggest that legal aid actually doesn't have a core role in an amnesty or discussion. They have a means-tested basis where they provide legal services to indigent consumers, and it may be that they could potentially help with going to court to rescind the judgment, but it might not qualify. I would suggest that, generally speaking, legal aid wouldn't regard the rescission of a judgment as worthy of their work. They're normally looking at criminal matters and more matters which impinge on the personal welfare of a consumer, not their financial welfare.
Chairperson and honourable members, I just would like to say that from our point of view, from what we've seen before us, there are many people who are paying debts which in our view they do not owe. So that is some very important consideration when one looks at amnesty, the period for cut, the amount for cut-off and so on, very critical. Because there might be people who are adversely listed who actually do not owe the money that they are listed for. And that is something important that we believe attention should be paid to. We have also seen people getting into debt rearrangement agreements and consent orders for a single debt, for one credit agreement, for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, which easily they could have had a voluntary arrangement in place, which wouldn't keep them from the ability to access credit. So that, those are things that greatly concern us. The periods of time that people enter into for debt rearrangement. We cannot say to parties when their agreements are legal. We cannot say to them, we cannot endorse those agreements as orders of the tribunal, only for things that are patently and obviously illegal. The term we have to consent to if people are not going into duplum and so on. But otherwise, we when we initially started getting consent orders and debt rearrangements, we were very intrigued by the fact that we were getting 100% of it from one geographical area. So we decided to hold our hearings in that area. We drove there, we saw three credit providers, same credit provider in one street, in a town where you can see people are economically depressed. So what happens to the economy in that town when the majority of people are going to debt rearrangement agreements, cannot access credit for 5, 7, 10 years? Those are the questions I think we have to ask ourselves as responsible regulators. We have to ask ourselves those questions. And we have to ask ourselves what are the solutions for those people. And not in a paternalistic way, but in a way that says that we are really looking after the purpose of this legislation, which is talking about economic growth for all. And that is really the last input that I'd like to make on the side of the tribunal to the conversation today, Jefferson. Thank you.
If you don't mind, can you tell us the name of the town?
It is for Ian from Jefferson.
Honorable Bill, Sir Ian. In the whole thing. Okay, but thank you very much. Any other comments? Well, not enough.
No, thanks. Mine is just to re-emphasize what you have been saying. In case if it was not clear from our presentation, we said in the main DTI is requesting that select committee make input on the government, the CTSO, MPR, to further consult on the proposed amnesty, which you repeated yourself and then you gave us 6 months. And then lastly, that we consolidate the findings and then we revise to the committee. I think you referred to, but I just wanted them to be revisited for the consent of the
time. Covered. 6 months is just another corner, and for us politicians, very quick, you know. So it wants within 6 months. Now, let's reach a compromise. Let's say end of February. So that this financial year will done with it. End of February, September, October, November, December, January, February. Yeah, end of February is okay. Now that then we can come back so that we have March, which is the last month. And come back, and so that by the end of this financial year, we would have said we have done something moving to the next year. Honorable members, thanks very much for your contribution, more especially to the presenter. You have done a wonderful job. We are so much empowered, and I wonder, you know, I'm sitting with interviews. And I've been stealing some of the things that you have been saying as coming from this committee. So you have really empowered us. It really shows that if we gave ourselves time to sit down, discuss and talk, there's a way of moving forward. Otherwise we can keep on blaming one another, not knowing what one another does. Thanks very much for making the effort, for coming from today. We are going to meet in 6 months' time, but we'll meet in your campaign wherever you are. I want to attend. This committee wants to attend. Please invite us. If the tribunal is going somewhere, NCR is going, please invite us. We want to go, and wherever we go, Credit Bureau, please invite us. We want to greet people, and we're not shy to say we are pushing for amnesty. Whatever you give us this platform, we'll say that. thanks very much. Please, those that are traveling, travel safe. We've got some tea outside. I thought that's why I let you go. We are done. We are finished now. Please enjoy your tea. That's all we have to do.